From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. This hour, we continue our discussion that began last hour that looks at the tragedy in Orlando and the path forward. Now, last hour, we had a chance to talk to some guests about a number of issues that were related, but it wasn't until later in the hour that we had a chance to discuss the questions of the suspect in this case and his background. We had some comments. I had an email from a listener who said, "You are purposely avoiding Islam." That is not the case at all. And this hour, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. In fact, we're going to talk a lot more about that. We'll take more of your phone calls and questions and comments as well. So whether you want to talk about whatever issue related to what happened in Orlando you want to talk about, we can do that this hour. And let me welcome our guests who are in studio with me now. Sarir Fazli is here, the president of the Islamic Center of Rochester. Sarir, welcome. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Jake Shapiro is here. He's a longtime staff member of 140 Alex in Rochester. And Jake, last hour we had Peter Moore in from Bachelor Forum, the oldest gay bar in Rochester. 140 Alex is another popular part of the LGBT community.
Yes, it
isn't
is.
It? Yeah. You've been there for about 12 years?
Yes, I've been at that establishment for 12 years, but I've worked for Lisa and 140 Alex for about 7-8 years.
Okay. How are you doing? What's the reaction, you know, since the weekend?
I mean, I'm being glued to my phone and glued to the TV set, you know, just watching the news unfold, and it's a tragedy. It's very sad. I find myself being more emotional this time around. Only because it seems so close to home and how it affected our, you know, my community, the gay community, and working at a bar. And it's very sad and it's hard to wrap my head around.
Does it scare you at all, Jake?
You know, yes and no. It scares me only because, you know, it could happen anywhere. And to know that, you know, these people were out and trying to have a good time and just have fun and be with their friends and, you know, and next thing you know, their lives have ended. So yeah, that does scare me, you know. You catch yourself looking over your shoulder a little bit more. And especially, you know, working in that industry, it's difficult.
Sarir, as president of the Islamic Center of Rochester, I'll just start broadly asking for your first response to this tragedy.
Our response is the same as with every tragedy.
Yeah,
it's horrifying that somebody has the ability to be so heavily armed, walk around and enter a public place, and not just a public, not like a library, but this is a bar at a very busy time of night, and can take control and just start shooting. It's scary from the standpoint that this happens and can happen in a public place with what appears to be relative ease, but it is absolutely humbling when you think about the number of innocent lives that were lost and injured, and our deepest sympathies, as is the whole community, the whole world today, have established and have communicated their heartfelt sympathies and prayers for all the victims, their family and friends.
Sarir, when we first get the news that there's been a mass shooting, you wait to learn about the suspect. In those, sort of in that interim, I imagine, you know, there's no good news coming. But if the suspect is a Muslim, that sometimes sparks this viewpoint about the Islamic community in this country, around the world. Are you concerned about reprisal? Do those thoughts come up for you?
You know, this time, you know, historically, we really haven't felt any issues because our community has always been very well-educated, very reasonable, very tolerant, and they have been willing to learn and listen. And we've had good experience with that as far as our interfaith relationships and just, you know, the average public. This time, it is a little different. There seems to be this, again, another rush to judgment about Muslims in particular and how we feel or act or want to behave. I can't say it enough that it has nothing to do with us or our beliefs. As far as the issue of safety is concerned, the Islamic Center, this is the month of Ramadan, so it's a very, very busy time at the center, probably from 6 o'clock until a little after midnight. And yes, security issues have been raised. They will be raised, and there will be some precautions taken, not because of a threat, because I think our community is much above that, but I think just to make our community feel as though there is somebody that is aware of the circumstances and the surroundings, given the climate.
last night I heard from a friend of mine who is a Muslim, and she said, we cannot let this pit communities against one another, and that there are forces in the media, forces in certain aspects of the political commentariat that will turn this into Islam against the gay community, that that's a natural split, etc. First of all, Sarir, is there a natural split between Islam and the gay community?
If we are talking about how does Islam view the practice of being gay or homosexuality, the fact of the matter is that Islam does prohibit it, as do the other monotheistic religions. With respect to anybody thinking that Islam would prescribe anything having to do with what happened on Sunday morning, that is an absolute no. We are not ever to judge anybody. We believe that is God's doing, and that's his job. There will never be a time where anybody will be able to convince me or anybody else that Islam or Muslims or anybody would dare dream of trying to follow their religion by engaging in any act of violence similar to what we saw on Sunday morning. And I am, you know, adamant that there will not be, at least in Western New York, at least in Rochester, there will be no split or no call to arms amongst the various communities, whether they're gay or not gay, Muslim or non-Muslim, not while we're here, because this incident is so unrelated and removed from Islam and what it teaches that I couldn't imagine even for a second there being any kind of an exchange between the communities. I can tell you that last night I was visited by a member of the press, and they were headed to the rally. I conveyed my feelings and sympathies through the press member to the community. This morning, in all of the back and forth that I've had, I got an email from that person saying, thank you, we appreciate the comments you've made, and we should have a sit-down. And I haven't had a chance to reply to that yet, but I can assure you there will be some dialogue between the two houses before this gets out of control, because there is no call to arms between the communities. That'll never happen.
I was kind of searching online for some background, and a number of people had pointed me to a BBC program in which they had a panel of people typically from London, but in different parts of the Islamic community there, about what it meant to be Islamic today and in various parts. And one of the questions was, can you be gay and a Muslim? And that led me to a Daily Beast story with a story about a man named Sidney Thompson. 1972, he was a young black man, graduated from high school in Detroit. He was gay. By 1978, he was working for California Governor Jerry Brown's office in San Francisco. He helped coordinate rallies for gay rights. He went to Washington, D.C. in 1979 to continue his effort there. And then in the early 80s, he began a tenure in Beijing University. He studied Arabic and Middle Eastern studies. And in 1984, at the age of 30, Thompson converted to Islam. He changed his name to Dai Abdullah. And today he's known in Washington, D.C. as Imam Abdullah, the only openly gay imam in the United States, at least according to the Daily Beast, one of only three in the world. And they talked to him about what happened in Orlando. And he said he was heartbroken as a gay imam. He said that he thinks that there is a reconciliation for you to be a gay Muslim. But he said, regardless of what you think of the practice, it is an absolute perversion of Islam to hurt anybody.
That is spot on. When somebody asks a Muslim whether or not he is allowed or almost encouraged to engage in any act of violence against an innocent individual or group of persons, the answer is a unanimous no. And, you know, we've said it many a time, you know, what happens in war or what happens in times of conflict, we can discuss that and argue that. There is no argument, there is no conflict here, there is no war here, it's 1 or 2 in the morning on a Sunday morning and people are out having a good time. Whatever it is that they're doing and they choose to do is their free will. There is nothing in Islam that would have called for anybody to act in the way that they did. I can't speak to, unfortunately, I'm not an expert on Islamic jurisprudence, and I don't want anybody to think that I am. However, I can tell you Muslims are prohibited from engaging in interest-bearing transactions. They're prohibited from drinking alcohol. They're prohibited from gambling. They're prohibited from doing any number of things that, unfortunately, we do because we're human beings. That whether that makes some of us any less Muslims or more Muslims than others, whether you have a gay imam or not gay imam, that's going to be for the Almighty to decide. But I do know, and I can tell you that as a regular person, the number of things that Muslims are prohibited from doing that they do, and they do willingly and knowingly, whether or not it makes them a better or a worse Muslim, that's not for me to judge or decide.
Are there openly gay members of the Islamic Center in Rochester?
I have yet to meet one. I have yet to have somebody come up to me and introduce themselves as such. Do I think they're there? I do.
You think there are gay members, but not openly so?
Correct.
Is that a sign that Islam needs to be more welcoming, or at least sort of promote a different posture?
You know, I don't know about promotion, mm-hmm. because in Islam, especially at the Islamic Center, we welcome people from all different countries. We probably have people who worship at our place that come from 40 or 50 different countries. They bring with them their nations, what's the word I want to use? They bring with them their customs from their countries. And sometimes those do or do not jive exactly with, you know, what somebody might consider mainstream or regular Islam, because the country practices versus the religious practices can be different. So we don't go out of our way necessarily to try to include, or for want of a better word, indoctrinate anybody. The doors are open. People come. They pray. They engage in whatever worship they want to do, whether it's reading the Quran or engaging in study circles or discussions. As far as us holding a meeting or looking for a support group or anything like that, we haven't done it with anybody else. We have a new Muslim group, new Muslim volunteers, we call them, people who have come to Islam, either converted or reverted. That's a separate group. It's just people who are new to the faith who need some orientation, and we get them going. But unless somebody were to openly come out and say that they had this characteristic or that characteristic or what have you, then that's a conversation we can have. Is it something that we generally go out looking for? We don't usually do that with many different things at the Islamic Center for a number of different reasons.
Okay. Let me take our first phone call of the hour. It's Don in East Rochester. He's been waiting to weigh in. Go ahead, Don.
Good afternoon, and thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
If you Google gay Muslims, you'll find that there are several organizations in the United States and Canada of gay Muslims. I know there's one out in the San Francisco area. I know there's one in Toronto and probably several other places. These are openly gay people who practice the Muslim faith, and they do both with pride. But what I would like to comment on is not turning this into a gay Muslim vendetta. And the first thing that Donald Trump says when he opened his mouth yesterday about this incident, not one word about sympathy toward the lesbian and gay community, which this attack was aimed at, not one word about sympathy for the victims and their families. The first thing he says is that, first of all, he wanted to be patted on the back for predicting this happening, and secondly, he wanted to use this as an opportunity to come out with his bigoted anti-Muslim attacks, promising to close the borders to Muslim immigrants. Not one word of sympathy toward the lesbian and gay community about this, and not one word of sympathy to the victims. We cannot use this. We cannot let this be used as an attempt to divide our communities. We need to be all one in the struggle against bigotry. Thank you.
Don, thank you for the phone call. Let me start with Jake there. What do you make of Don's comments there? He's saying he doesn't think that there should be any sort of pitting one community against another.
Oh, yeah, I completely agree. You know, we're all in this fight together. And I feel like, you know, there have been so many attacks, just in the United States and France and, you know, everywhere, that I don't think that it should be one community against another community, because, you know, not everybody is, you know, are like these people, you know, and we need to band together and help fight this, you know, terrorism and the bigotry, because that's going to happen, you know, and I don't think that we should sink to that level. You know, I think that we should come together and, you know, band together and fight for this. And
And Don's right, by the way. You'll find plenty of videos online of people telling their stories as gay Muslims, which mm-hmm. which I've seen shared in many different places, and that has inspired many people, saying that, you know, Islam is becoming much more progressive than you were probably seeing in caricatures in the media, et cetera. So you're kind of smiling at that, Sarir. What do you think?
I mean, you know, the idea, when somebody talks about things being progressive, I will pause. Because there are always going to be things that Muslims are taught that they should follow and not follow. Tolerance in our community for any kind of method of worship or behavior or what have you has, not only does it have to get better, it has gotten better. I don't want somebody to come to me and say that in our Islamic center, we don't tolerate either different schools of thought on Islamic practices or Islamic behaviors or what we can and should or shouldn't accept as normal or appropriate behaviors. I don't want someone to tell me that I'm not allowed to have a gay Muslim in our house of worship or whatever, because I know that, you know, as the caller said, there are so many. And as I said, you know, as we always say, how somebody chooses to live their life and worship their God is between them and their God. There's no intermediary or anybody who's going to come in and try to make that distinction or correction. When people have questions, they go to the right authorities, to an imam, and the imam answers their questions. And how they take that answer or based on the imam's teaching or whatever is what we will go by. But I don't ever want anybody to think that the availability or inability to communicate in our place is going to be seen as not being, say, progressive.
And I think to be fair, there's probably two different ways to respond to that. I mentioned the openly gay imam, formerly Sidney Thompson, Imam Abdullah in Washington, D.C. In the Daily Beast article I was referring to, he referenced the fact that there are now at least 8 predominantly Muslim countries that do not criminalize a gay lifestyle on a national level at all, including the world's most populous Muslim nation, Indonesia, but also Jordan, Turkey, Bahrain, Albania. So this is the imam saying it used to be none, or it used to be, you know, different, and now there's 8 nations. But on the flip side of that, the Washington Post had a headline, here are the 10 countries where homosexuality may be punished by death. Yemen, Iran, Iraq, Mauritania, Nigeria, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, Somalia, Sudan, and the UAE. Now, Sarir is not here to answer for that. That's not fair, of course. But when it comes to perceptions of the way communities are treated, you know, that has to change, doesn't it, Sarir? I mean, you can't have a death penalty for being gay.
It definitely, things do have to change.
Yeah.
And whether we talk about awareness or education, you know, how these different countries treat their citizens, you know, I wish that I could speak for any of them, because we have lots of suggestions for many of the countries on that list on what they should and shouldn't be doing as far as their citizenry and how they run their countries. But that's a different story. But, you know, we want to see an ability for people to be able to communicate and have a dialogue. When I look at some of the people that are first generation born here, like I was, now my children are second generation, the conversation is totally different. It is now a norm that there are communities out there that are different to what our kids or how I was raised. And this is not something that they necessarily have any hard questions about. This is just accepted as is. And the dialogue starts in the middle schools, in high schools, on college campuses. I remember how it was when I was growing up and I was at the University of Rochester and then law school at SUNY Buffalo, and how the dialogue is now. There is tremendous progress just in the United States in these last, you know, 20 years, not to mention when you give a list of so many countries with heavy majority Muslim populations that may have decriminalized the behavior. So there is significant movement internationally and specifically with the Muslim countries.
Okay, let me get back to your phone calls here. And I want to remind you that Sarir Fazali is here, president of the Islamic Center of Rochester. Jake Shapiro is here as well. He's a longtime staff member at 140 Alex in Rochester. And we've been talking about an upcoming vigil tonight, the vigil at 7 p.m. tonight outside of the Bachelor Forum, and that is right near Starry Nights Cafe at the corner of Atlantic and University. It's a vigil to honor the victims of Orlando, but also to talk about action going forward. And I want to hit a couple of your phone calls now. Peter in Rochester. Go ahead, Peter. Let me hit that again. Go ahead, Peter.
Hi. Thanks for allowing me to offer a comment.
Sure.
I just finished a short time ago a book called The Faith Instinct by Nicholas Wade. Very interesting book that talks about how religion evolves. And there's a point in there which I think is interesting to make. And he talks about some of the things that are prescribed by religion, including homosexuality, and talks about how these were actually helpful for religions during their times of expansion, military expansion, and that they led to the making sure there were plenty of bodies, soldiers available for those, you know, those wars and expansion. And it's a cogent argument he puts forward around that, how these policies change over time, but those certainly were part of the time when the Islam was rapidly expanding and may also be a factor with Christianity. The question I have as a spiritual person, but not belonging to any organized religion, is I really cannot see how it's possible to argue that if your religion has a very pronounced policy against something like homosexuality, how that you cannot avoid saying that that carries with it a judgment, that there's something wrong with it or bad about it, and that this then opens the door for people who are not, well-balanced or have extreme anger, to then act on it thinking that they're actually doing something that is approved by the religion. And I'd be pleased to hear what the guest has to say about that.
Peter, thank you for the phone call. Sarir, go ahead.
Yeah. Many religions have certain prescriptions against certain behavior, whether it's premarital sex or abortion or what have you, both of which Islam has prohibitions against to some point. As far as certain behaviors not being allowed in the religion, so many things are not allowed, as I said earlier. That doesn't mean if somebody is seen or known or admittedly engaging in any or all of those behaviors that there's a call to violence against those people. As I said, you know, there are going to be behaviors that are perhaps to some people on an individual basis more accepted or tolerable than others. But again, the general and the common Muslim man or even the imam, they cannot give or should not be giving prescriptions against a person or a community in the kind that we're talking about today without having some idea of what it is going to do. And, you know, when we offer our prayers, for example, we don't pray through or in addition to anybody. We pray behind the imam, but the connection with God is one-on-one. And the only person who can reward us or not reward us is God. So the fact that he has prohibited certain things or asked that we not do certain things, if we do them, that doesn't allow anybody else to come and maim us or hurt us because they see us doing those things or they think we're doing those things. That is not acceptable, and that's not how this works.
One of our listeners named Jake follows up just to ask, from your perspective, Sarir, as a Muslim, as not necessarily as the president of the Islamic Center, but just as a Muslim who you talk about your own children and seeing the next generations and how the viewpoints toward the gay community is changing, it's evolving. You know, does the Islamic view of homosexual acts, does it ever make you question your religion? Does it make you think that's, I don't like that part of it, I think that might be errant in some way?
I am not in a position, knowing what I know about my religion and how I've been taught, to question it. The Quran, as it is, one of the first verses is that this is some guidance for all of mankind and that it won't change. And in those things, I will not be in a position, nor am I, to question how or what is prescribed or not prescribed for me, because we are also taught that there are going to be things that you don't know that you'll have to accept because another authority knows best. And we see it almost every day. What, however, we do want, And as I said, I use it as, you know, as an example for when I was a student versus now with my children are students, is that dialogue, that level of communication that exists, it has to be multiplied. And it has to be multiplied at a much, much larger rate, because we want people to be able to have a communication with somebody. When I was in law school, I still remember being part of the Student Bar Association and turning to one of the class representatives of the class ahead of me, who was openly gay, and asking her, as an aside, to explain it to me. Because for a kid who grew up as a first-generation American, my parents were immigrants, as a Muslim, it was something that was not only foreign to me, but was obviously prohibited. And I was trying to understand the whole idea or the theory. And she told me, she said, this is as natural for me as not being homosexual may be for you. And it was a pretty quick conversation, and I understood exactly what she meant. And after that, we had a great relationship. We really did.
But Jake may say, doesn't that make you intellectually think there may be something flawed here in the approach to homosexuality?
You know, the idea of there being a flaw or there being some area that I do or do not understand, you know, I'm a human being and I can make a mistake and I will readily admit my mistakes. One thing in my limited, and as I said, my education is rather limited. I'm not a scholar on Islam and I'm not an expert in the jurisprudence. One thing I am not in a position to do is question what is contained within the book or the tradition of the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him. I don't think myself to be at any such level where I could try to, you know, pick and choose what I do and don't want to agree with in the book. What I do and don't follow may be different. We're all hypocrites at the end of the day. But as far as the body of the book, I'm not in a position to question that.
I want to listen to one comment that will help, I think lines up with the last phone call and the questions some people have about, you know, sort of applying what Islam teaches versus, you know, punishing people for being gay or those kind of things. And it comes from that BBC program. This is with Abdullah Al-Andalusi, the founder of the Muslim Debate Initiative, and he's a rather controversial Islamic lecturer and writer. He, of course, does not represent all of Islam, just as Sarir doesn't. Nobody does, of course. But this particular clip is from the BBC television forum. And in this clip, he's responding to the story of a man named Asif, who is a Muslim, and explains how he came out to his parents. He's gay. The man, Asif, says it's very difficult to come out, very difficult to be both Muslim and gay. But his parents have embraced him. Here's what Abdullah Andalusi said when the BBC asked, can you be both Muslim and gay?
We are, as Muslim communities, in the plural, in this country, simultaneously oppressed in many respects and the oppressors. And that's a dynamic that plays out in every other scenario of victimhood, whether it's we talk about domestic abuse. Somebody invariably has had abuse done to them when they were young, and they turn into an abuser.
All right, sorry about that. That was the wrong clip. Let's grab the other one. And again, this is Abdullah Andalusi responding to the question, can you be both Muslim and gay?
We all have sinful desires. It's just actions which are judged in Islam. And, you know, in Islamic theology, there are many actions which are sinful, there are many actions which are permitted. And so we don't really say that you can't be gay and Muslim, because we don't recognize the term gay, or we don't make that discrimination between, you know, heterosexual, homosexual. This is all artificial. We're all just human. We shouldn't discriminate or judge someone or label someone, because that's when discrimination begins.
Okay. So I'm slightly confused. Would you therefore describe Asif as sinful?
You know what? What he does in the privacy of his own home is not really my concern.
I'm just saying.
No. But wait, look. I don't know what he does in the privacy of his own home. It's not my concern. It's not my business.
If you want
a judgment, you can refer it to God. I'm not God. I'm just a human being, like anybody else, a sinful human being. That being said, yeah, Islamic theology says there are certain actions like drinking alcohol, eating pork, and engaging in same-gender intercourse or different gender intercourse outside of marriage, these are all sinful actions, right? But you can still be a Muslim and do sinful actions. It's your belief that determines whether you are Muslim or not.
Okay, Sarir?
I couldn't agree more. How you believe, if you believe in the existence of one God and the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, as being his last and final messenger, that by itself makes you a Muslim, because you have given that declaration. What you do thereafter, whether you're committing crimes, whether you're being violent, whether you're engaging in prohibited acts under Islam, whether it's eating pork or drinking alcohol or whatever it is that you're doing, that doesn't necessarily make you a non-Muslim. It may make you a poor Muslim. But as he said, this is something that is best left to God to judge and decide as far as what happens to you once your time has come.
Bess is listening, and she writes an email that says, love the sinner, hate the sin. We've heard it before. In other words, we don't care if you are gay, just don't be happy. Is that an unfair way to describe it?
I would hope not. Again, with the whole love the sinner, hate the sin idea, you know, we, at least at the Islamic Center, there's no litmus test to come into the door and sit down and listen to our lectures and to pray behind whomever is leading the prayer, whether it's the imam or anybody else. Nobody asks you at the door whether you're a Shia or a Sunni or what, which of the four legal schools of thought you follow or what have you. So we want to be able to say we love everybody who comes into the door as a Muslim or who is out there as a Muslim. And, you know, sincerely I say I know plenty of Muslims. I know of plenty of Muslims who are lawbreakers and they've engaged in other seriously prohibited behaviors. We don't judge them. They come in just like anybody else does. They leave just like anybody else does. They get the exact same respect that everybody else does.
And to follow up on Don's comment about Donald Trump and some of what Donald Trump had to say following the Orlando tragedy, Trump said, very bizarrely boasted, I called it, as if nobody else said that there would be future terroristic acts. Very strange. But he also seemed to reinforce his call for a ban on Muslims entering the country, ignoring the fact that the shooter in this case is an American-born citizen. But setting that aside, Sarir, are you concerned that in the midst of this political election, that emboldens this anti-Muslim sentiment writ large?
It definitely does, because, you know, whether it's social media or whether it's just on the news, you see some of the people that are Trump supporters. And I say it openly, whomever somebody wants to support, God bless them. They should support whom they feel their conscience wants them to support, whether it's Trump or anybody else. But when a presidential candidate, now he is the nominee or the presumptive nominee, goes out of his way to congratulate himself on having, as you said, called another massacre, and as a result thinks that we can ban a population, we can ban whoever we want. But as I'm learning, and as I've learned basically just through the press, he was an American citizen. I believe he was born here. The guy had problems with the law. He had issues with being violent with, I believe, his first wife. He managed to end up the subject of two different FBI investigations, somehow cleared from both. Apparently, he was very open with coworkers, and he was a security guard. Whether he was bonded or not, I don't know. But he was speaking to coworkers who, in fact, reported him about wanting to either kill or hurt other people. And then he's able to go out and buy the kind of machinery and weaponry that he was able to get and walk into a place and wipe out 50 people and harm another 50, 60 people. I think the focus has to be on how somebody who is the subject of so many complaints, and especially two investigations by the Federal Bureau of Investigations, has the kind of carte blanche to be able to go out and legally purchase this kind of weaponry, that's what we're being told, and go out and commit these kind of crimes. I think the focus has to be a little bit more on how that happens versus the fact that it was a Muslim or somebody who calls himself a Muslim. The focus has got to be on this kind of stuff, and you've got to be able to separate whether he was a Muslim or a non-Muslim or whatever. The focus really has to be somewhere else.
I just realized how late I am for a break. Jake, did you want to weigh in on that? I saw you nodding there. You agree with what you just heard?
I completely agree with him on that. You know, that's what always gets me is he didn't go in with, you know, a pistol or a shotgun. These are assault rifles is what I read. And how somebody can gain access to this, especially, you know, being investigated two times or maybe more, that just baffles me. You know, I'm all for people's rights to bear arms and to have their, you know, guns. But when it comes to, I don't understand how a person needs an assault rifle and, you know, how That's what always bothers me. So I completely agree with him. You know,
do you feel any different going to work after what happened in Orlando?
You know, definitely. I don't want to say different. I think over the course of this past 6 months or 8 months, you know, it's definitely made me more alert. And I definitely, you know, you tend to see people, and when they look uncomfortable, it makes you uncomfortable, you know, and that could be because they've never been there, or, you know, or they're not out, and it's their first time at like a gay lesbian bar. But it does make you like kind of like look at them and see, okay, what's going on with this person.
Isn't that awful too? You don't want to feel that way, do you?
No, not at all. Not at all. But it's that's the way it is now. And, you know, you could probably ask anyone and they'd say the same thing.
Let's get our only break of the hour and we'll come back to more of your phone calls and questions and comments here as we talk to Jake Shapiro and Sarir Fazali, who is the president of the Islamic Center of Rochester, right back here on Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Tuesday on our next Connections, our first hour, we preview the Rochester International Jazz Festival. 10 days away, John Nugent sits down with us to tell us who's coming to town and what excites him most about the Jazz Fest this year. Then in our second hour, new emphasis on combating elder abuse. It's all coming up Tuesday. We will talk with you then on Connections. All right, here we come back here. We were just talking about, in our break here with our guests, where the vigil is tonight. So there's a vigil and a rally at 7 p.m. tonight, honoring the victims lost in Orlando. And Jake Shapiro was just mentioning that's at outside Bachelor Forum, right?
Correct. Yep.
Okay. So that's, if you haven't been there before, can you describe the location there, Jake?
Yeah, I believe it's on the corner of University and Atlantic, right next to Starry Nights. And there are big, like, what are they, lawn ornaments for gay, lesbian, transgender out front of that. And I believe that's where they're having it, right there.
Okay, and that's at 7 o'clock tonight if you want to attend. And I'm told that there will be people from a lot of different backgrounds, a lot of different leaders in our community who will be there showing support for the gay community and those lost in Orlando as a sign of not only solidarity and grieving, but a rally. So if you want to attend, that's at 7 o'clock tonight. And so let's continue now with the discussion. I'll get back to your phone calls. And this next call is John in Rochester. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Evan. You know, Mike, number one, it was a terrible, terrible tragedy. But my concern is this, and there's a minority of Muslims who believe in what Muhammad would do. Muhammad was a very violent person, and Islam was founded on violence. And you've got a small minority that believe in that. In fact, there was a Pew study done going back 5 or 6 years ago, which said that 13% of American Muslims would support suicide bombings under certain circumstances. And that percentage, of course, skyrocketed in the Middle East. So my concern is that I think there's got to be more openness about the founding of Islam in that background. It seems to be glossed over quite a bit.
Sarir Fazali, go ahead.
My learning and the teachings that were prescribed to me concerning anything having to do with the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and the establishment of Islam is totally different than the caller's. You know, the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, was a man who every morning when he would go for his first prayer of the morning, he would take a path by his aunt's home, and his aunt hated him, and she would leave thorns on that walkway every morning. And as he would walk, the wind would blow those thorns away. One day he went that way and there would be a couple left over. One day he went that way and there were no thorns. And what did he do? He went to visit her and say, hey, what's going on? There were no thorns today. And she was sick. So he paid her a visit. He was sent, for people who don't realize, he was sent as a mercy for mankind. All about forgiveness, for tolerance, and for anything opposite of violence. When I gave a short mention last night of the Prophet Muhammad's teachings and of the angel Gabriel who came to the Prophet and his wife, and his wife narrates the tale where she says, the angel so many times ordered us to be good and kind to our neighbors that we feared that we would have to make them our heirs. Those are the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad and the history and the genesis of where Islam comes from. The first words revealed in the Quran were not anything having to do with violence or other. They had to do with education. And the first word revealed in the Quran to the Prophet is read. This has nothing to do with how Islam spread or what it teaches or may imply. That is, that nothing could be further from
the truth. Well, you're wrong on that. You're wrong. There's a lot of sources that would contradict you. I can name a number of sources, one being a historian wrote a book. The historian was William Federer, and I read that book, and there's a number of other books out there that have done a thorough research by historians on the Prophet Muhammad. He was a very violent person, and unfortunately, this percentage of Muslims believe it.
If there are different histories being taught outside of what Islam is based upon and focuses on, I can't speak for historians. And, you know, one day I got a flyer in the mail, I don't know if it was targeted or not targeted, about something similar to what the caller may be mentioning. And I had a conversation with whomever it was that sent that to me. You know, people can research and go to any source that they want for information. I mean, there are books and treatises and volumes written on the life of the Prophet Muhammad and his teachings and what he enjoined and what he did not enjoin. And, you know, to try to classify 1.8 billion people as a violent group based on what may or may not have been taught by the Prophet, it's not a fair argument to make, and it's very inaccurate. I can stand on and I can bring up many different examples, but the idea that somehow violence is a part of our or any other religion, I just don't see it anywhere else.
All right, a lot of questions about this, and Sarir has said on this program in the past, you know, you're the kind of guy who welcomes dialogue. You welcome questions. The Islamic Center's door is always open. So if you're the kind of person with questions about it, and if Sarir, if you don't always feel like, you know, you're a scholar on legal matters, I know there are people at the center who can offer some help there. So is that offer still open to the community?
It is always open. Go to our website, give us a call, send an email. We will, once Ramadan is finished, probably in the fall, we'll organize another open house. And, you know, it's not a question of, and on those times, you know, we've done it in the past and we'll do it again. At those times, it's not that we put on a presentation. We put up a panel of three or four people and we just throw the floor open. It's a very unstructured thing. It's just a Q&A. So people like this gentleman or anybody who has questions can bring and talk about their sources and engage in a dialogue.
All right. An email from Angie, and Angie says the following. Evan, thanks for having this discussion today. In the past, many people have rightly made fun of Christian churches that try to, quote, pray away the gay. And now some governments are making it illegal to engage in such programs. But I feel like we are occasionally going a little easy on other faiths that have similar motives about gay people. Does Islam try to pray away the gay? I'm curious to know about that. And I wonder what your guest would say if he had a gay child.
As far as the pray away the gay statement, you know, nobody has ever come to me. As I said, I am not a cleric. I am not the imam. As the president of the board of directors of the Islamic Center, we handle the business of the center and how it runs on a day-to-day basis. I don't think anybody has come to my knowledge to the imam and or any other scholar that we have there and has been instructed to pray it away. I wish I could answer that question. With respect to the personal question regarding my children and how they choose to practice or not practice their religion, or whatever orientation they may be. You know, this is, as we say, everything in the house whether it's discussing the incident that happened yesterday or what happened in Paris or San Bernardino or the homosexuality in the House. It's something that has to be discussed in the House. There has to be an open line of communication between any parent, Muslim or non-Muslim, and their child or children regarding any of these topics. I can't throw out and accept somebody to believe if I say yes, I would accept it, or no, I wouldn't accept it, because I'm speaking now to so many, you know, tens of thousands of people, they may just shrug it off and say he's just, you know, making it up. This is all about communication. And whether it's my house or somebody else's house, you know, people have to understand that how we teach our children and what we teach our children has to have the basis. And we have to be open to answering and accepting their questions.
They want to hear you say it's fine.
Because it is fine. It is. And the idea that somebody can unteach or you know, put the cat back in the hat is a preposterous thought.
Well, that is a strong statement. So, Angie, thank you for the email. Let me grab another phone call. Noel in East Rochester. Go ahead, Noel.
Hey there. I spent first night of Ramadan doing breakfast with the Islamic community. And I'm an active Christian elder in my church, and I don't share these paranoid views at all. And I think people who want to understand the Quran need to read all of the passages about Jesus and Mary in the Quran. It is amazing, and it reflects that in the 600s, the story of Jesus and Mary was widespread and well-known, because the prophet does not speak to the reader in the same tone of voice or the same point of view as we find in Romans 8 through 12 from St. Paul, who seems to be arguing to a Greek audience that doesn't know or understand anything. I'll stand by if you have any other questions.
Well, go ahead, Sarir. What do you make there?
For somebody to be able to read the Quran and understand it, you know, every passage that they read comes with a historical context as to what was going on when that passage was revealed. I've given some lectures at a few parochial schools in my time as the president of the Islamic Center, and invariably I start giving a chat with the only surah in the Quran that is named after a woman, and it's called Maryam, or Mary. And when I read a couple of verses from that surah, and I ask the kids many a time, okay, somebody tell me what I've read from, and I get all sorts of answers, the Bible, gospel, the this, the that. And then finally somebody comes up and says, oh, you know, the guy's from the Islamic Center, it's got to be from the Quran. And I say, yes, and I tell them, I said, if you go home with nothing else today, go home and tell your parents that some guy read us part of a chapter of the Quran, and he read us the story of the Virgin Mary giving birth to Jesus, and it is chapter and verse as the story is narrated by every religion. And people, when they hear that, they don't buy it, they don't understand it until we show it to them, and then they accept it. And I got to tell you, the number of people who really have the awakening or open their eyes after they hear that is tremendous. And it all comes from, as I said from the beginning, from more communication and more dialogue.
Noel, what do you think?
He's right on. I agree with him. Fortunately, I had to read the Quran in college when I was a literature major.
Well, I will say this, and Noel, thank you for the phone call, and I will just reiterate that I think it is always beneficial to read the books that we're going to be talking about. So let's close, as we get ready to close the hour, with this. Let me ask both of our guests, going forward now, how do we make sure that, I'm not going to ask how we prevent events like Orlando. I mean, that's, but let me ask, Sarir Fazli, as the director of the Islamic Center, how do you make sure that your community continues its outreach to make sure there isn't sort of this marginalization, this otherization, whether it's the way the Muslim community is viewed in Rochester or around the world, or the way the Muslim community interacts with the gay community? What do you do going forward?
I mean, people have to judge my community locally based on how they interact with us. And I find it extremely important that any dialogue that exists, number one, it has to be two ways. Somebody comes to me or I come to them, they also have to have an equal partner there. But when you're judging someone, it's not, it is so inappropriate to judge me based on what somebody who claims to share my faith does halfway across the world or even halfway across the country. What is so important is how are these people treating me and how are they behaving in my community, in my area? I've said it before, on North Street, there's a group of Muslims that have formed almost like a food pantry, and they give away food, I don't know the schedule, to whomever comes to the door. They don't ask, are you Muslim, are you non-Muslim, are you a criminal, are you homosexual, are you not? They don't care. This is about humanity and how we are taught to treat humans and humanity. And people have to see that whatever they see in the media or whatever they see from these random acts of violence from people who claim to be Muslims, oftentimes there is zero similarity between those people and what they have in their very own communities.
Jake Shapiro, going forward, how do you hope to heal?
I think that, you know, just moving forward, just come together. Definitely these rallies and this vigil are a good start, you know, and communication. I feel like, you know, I'm one of those people, if I don't understand something, I will ask, you know. But so many people are quick to judge others based on what they see, and especially in the media. But just, if you don't understand, just ask. And, you know, if you're curious about something, just ask. Because someone will be there to answer, and it will open your eyes.
And maybe pour a drink for you.
Yeah.
That's what you do.
I will be there.
140, Alex, thank you. Thank you, Jake. Thank you for being here and
thank you.
Taking time out of your day. And Sweer follows Ali, as he has said today and in the past, the door is always open at the Islamic Center of Rochester. You know, I don't want to keep having these kind of conversations, but I know the community benefits from hearing your voice, and I hope you'll keep coming back, Sareer.
Anytime. Thank you for having
us again. Thank you for being here. Listeners, thank you for your participation in these two difficult hours today, and for your understanding as we shifted programming to focus on the aftermath of Orlando and going forward. Our thanks to John Andrus, the engineer, and Megan Mack is the producer. I'm Evan Dawson, and we will talk with you on a Tuesday.